thank you everyone for coming here this morning. My name is Meir Yagi. I cover telecom, media, and technology here at Desjardins. And I'm very happy to have with us today the management team from TELUS, Doug French, the CFO. Thank you, Doug, for coming.
Thank you.
I'll start with a few questions, but please feel free to participate by raising your hand if you have questions you want to ask Doug. And after, if you
I think I saw the competition in the lobby. I'm just going to shut the door, okay?
All right.
All right.
Anyway, it's all taped and on the website and on the web, so everybody can
listen. Oh, there goes that idea.
But if you have any follow-up questions, please direct them to me or to Robert, who is with us today, head of IR, and we'll make sure to give you all the answers that you need. I'll start just with a general question, Doug. You've had good results in 2018, and your guidance for 2019 looks also a continuation of what you saw in 2018. What gives you confidence that you can attain those objectives, given what we're seeing in terms of ARPU pressure on wireless, some weakness a little bit on subscriber additions on wireless? Just you know how you get to that goal and achieve it.
Sure. We have a very strong track record of executing on our plans. If you go back to all of our results for the past 5-10 years, we've been met significantly all of our objectives. I think it's mainly sticking to your strategy. And so we've continued to focus on customers first and ensuring our customers are have no reason to leave. They have all the reason to expand the relationship with you. So focusing on that and differentiating ourselves from our competition on that front. And we've got the lowest churn rate and had the lowest churn rate for a very long time, being very reflective of that. Second component would be the best networks. We've 2 years in a row now won all of the wireless awards for the best networks and you know tracking in our third. And again, showing high quality and customer service married together from a strategy perspective. And then leveraging all of our assets. So building an asset portfolio which is diverse enough to continue to grow and manage through any of the short-term blips that wireline or wireless may have and leverage health or TELUS International, but build a portfolio of assets that is built for the long run, complement each other, and you continue to leverage off the greater portfolio while focusing on your strategy.
So on wireless, if we try to dig a little bit into what's driving the business with Freedom and Shaw trying to get more market share, how do you see the market right now in terms of competition and in terms of pricing in 2019 so far?
Well, we've seen a lot of competition. The good thing about Canada is we still have growth. And so subscriber growth is still leading, I guess, our top line revenue as it is with the industry. I think we had about 1.5 billion customer loads in the industry last year. We're 89% penetrated. The U.S. and most European countries are 100 plus. So still room to grow in Canada from a volume perspective. On the rate side, we have seen a softening of ARPU and we continue to focus on quality loading. So you've seen bigger buckets being put into market where customers are getting more for the same or more for less. And so that is putting pressure on ARPU. And so what we've continued to focus then is on the margin component. So how do we make sure we get high quality loading? There is parts of the industry at times where we chase a load or you know in the past have chased loads even though they aren't necessarily that valuable. And so our focus as a company has been, let's go back to the principles of not every load is a good load. Tablets being a good example of subsidizing tablets at a $5 ARPU isn't a good economic decision. So going back to focusing on high value customers, and we've had very strong loading in the last couple quarters of high quality loading. And then supplement that with our churn rate and keeping a customer longer for lifetime revenue. So being that churn advantage has also helped us significantly with our lifetime revenue. We have premiums to our competition of lifetime revenue up to 75% more, just based on the fact that our ARPU is strong, but our churn is even stronger. and being able to leverage that mix. But we'll still see growth from customer growth. We're looking at how do we focus more and more on margin and continue to up the scale of the mix of our loading in our base.
So when you look at ARPU, we've seen, as you said, deceleration, and some companies have turned into negative territory. How worse can this get? Like, basically, when you look at what's driving that momentum down in ARPU or APU, are we close to seeing a recovery, or the trends are still negative at this point in time?
The demand for data is still growing. So we're still seeing a significant growth on data. And so us as an industry need to be able to monetize that somewhat. So giving more value to our customer base is absolutely happening, and that's going to continue to happen. So there won't be a return to 2 to 3% ARPU growth. I don't see that happening. I do see a bit of a stabilization happening as we get through some of the specials that have happened, you know, the $60 10 gig a year ago and some other items where you re-rated your base significantly on overage. That being said, the demand for speed, the demand for more data is continuing to grow, and I think we'll be able to call it up our base in quality by not necessarily charging more, but offering better speeds, better packages, as we get into the 5G world as well. And I think that's where you're going to see sort of an uptick in stabilization. But do I think it's going to turn overnight? No, it's going to be a long, steady process. And we're not going to have a recovery overnight on that ARPU line, which then goes to focus on margin. And when you look at, you mentioned ABPU as well, when you look at handset prices increasing, ABPU should turn faster. Only to the extent you have to recover the cost of the handset. And certain handsets are now almost $2,000 it would cost us at the very high end. And that recovery over a 24-month period, assuming the customer gets it at the till for close to zero, is almost $100 a month. So that's that factor that brings into handsets that we need to manage through appropriate subsidization, transparency to our customer base so they know exactly that what portion of their bill is going to their handset. And when you throw in the fact we have the foreign exchange, that most of our handsets are purchased in U.S. dollars, there will be that differential compared to the U.S.
You mentioned 5G, and when is 5G going to be operational in your view and driving incremental revenues in Canada?
So the spectrum auction for 3.5, which will be crucial for 5G, the rules aren't out yet, nor is the exact timing. We expect to get from ISED that update very shortly. We expect it to be sometime mid-2020 to be the auction, which then you could roll out and put, you know, the spectrum into service quite quickly. That being said, it's probably late 2020 that you would see 5G speeds in parts of the country for real 5G. You can do some pilots in certain areas with the current spectrum you have, but it's not going to be broadly spread. So I would suggest late 2020 you'll see that. And what 5G, the first wave of 5G with 3.5 will do is, yes, your whole wireless network speeds increase, but even the bigger impact is your latency reduces. So for applications where you need symmetrical applications with low latency, 5G on wireless will help with that significantly. So you're going to get, you know, when you talk about automated cars, you talk about just automation in general, healthcare applications where response time is essential. 5G will help unleash some of those applications to start to monetize further. Because the last thing you want in any of those applications is latency. That's what's going to significantly improve in the late 2020 period. And then you're then going to also just get pure speed. So gaming and other opportunities over wireless will be more practical than they are today, where today is more limited to high end at your home internet.
As a CFO, you're going to be signing off on billions of dollars of CapEx on 5G. You feel comfortable about the return?
Well, the good thing about our build out plan is we've been building and capabilities for 5G and preparing with our fiber build out that we've been doing in Western Canada and parts of Quebec, and so as you're putting fiber in for fiber to the home, we're pre-populating where we're going to need small cells in 5G. And with 5G, you need fiber closer and closer to the cell, and that backhaul to drive that speed. And so we've been doing a lot of that upfront in our current CapEx spend. And so as we get closer and closer to 5G and having to, you know, step up a little bit further on the CapEx front for 5G, we're also at 70% by the end of 2019 of our fiber build to the home. So we can actually see our fiber build starting to decline while 5G would go up, and we're confident the incremental or the net difference on our CapEx is going to be aligned with where we are today, plus or minus a little
on
bit.
Capital intensity.
On capital intensity overall as an organization.
Okay.
And so that, I think that's been why this fiber build that we've done, going first, leading the industry in a quality network of fiber to the home, and you've seen that and you can get to in a few minutes on our wireline results, but it's also very supplemental to our wireless execution and 5G.
I do get a lot of questions about the CRTC and what they're planning to do with wireless. I mean, the timing of your...
If you find out, would you let me know? No, I'm just kidding.
Or we're here to hear you say...
I'm kidding.
No, but your plan to spend on 5G is basically dependent maybe on the outcome of that hearing, because if the hearing goes the MVNO way, maybe the plans to deploy 5G could be delayed
or modified.
Yeah. What's your take on that hearing? And because the CRTC seems to be giving hints that they're thinking about moving
right
to an MVNO.
We're going to keep thinking through and working with the government on trying to bring the facts and what's best for Canadians to the table. The investments when we've seen, and you look at Europe, it's a good example where an MVNO environment was implemented and investment slowed down, rural areas were ignored, and coverage was only in the very, very densely populated, and they've regretted it. They're behind in technology. You walk through countries, even walk through London, and how many drop calls will you get as compared to Canada? And so it's inconsistent with the objective that Canadians should be connected irrespective of where they live, and the desire to have a internet platform for all Canadians, whether you're rural or urban. So we have to work through and help the government understand that and what kind of investment profile would change if that were the case. Second of all, a lot of the markets in the US are going down to three competitors, not four. And I would argue we have four healthy competitors in every single market in Canada. And so I can't imagine competition getting much, much stiffer on some of the rates. And we talked about declining ARPU, that it's all part of that package. So we believe the best thing for Canadians would continue investment. We as Canada, our networks are in the top three, if not number two recently in the world, in quality. Our coverage is 99% on LTE of all Canadians, and I don't think you're going to see that continue if you go down a world where you don't get an opportunity to monetize your investments the same way you do today.
Okay. Any questions on wireless?
It's to be determined. I think it would definitely help. I know we look at international markets when decisions are made in Canada. So, excuse me. I assume that would help, but it's hard to say. I think it just comes down to the feeling on affordability and the feeling on competition. We feel, though, that when you look at how diverse Canada is and that the population of Canada is the same as California, so if you had to build out California with the same population, that density and that ability to build a network doesn't include the mountains and the distance we have to cover from being one of the largest countries in the world. And so that balance, I think, needs to be in play. And if we really want to have connectivity for all and cover rural Canada the way that it should be covered, I hope that would be a precedent that would be followed. I'd say we're very, very aligned.
In terms of timing, in terms of CapEx spend, in terms of...
Yeah, I think our fiber build was ahead, so we're ahead on the fiber build, but I see a similar strategy from that other organization.
So current rate of wholesale rate is about $14 intra-carrier rate with about 40% in build margin. Why would you... is that rate... Do you think you could work with MVNOs with that rate? Which is $14 a gigabyte right now, as per CRTC 2018 ruling, and would the investment stop in the case that you would be needing to work with that type of wholesale price?
I'd have to look at it. It's a good question. I don't actually have the answer for you. I'll have to look at that on at what, where's the break even, or where would it be you be indifferent to an MVNO. On average, though, pricing is not maintained at that level. And if there's a mandated price point that would not meet the economics, it would definitely impact the investment portfolio. So I'd have to take a look back on where is that break even. I just don't have that at my fingertips. Thank you for the question.
You were talking about your fiber build. It's a good segue to talking about how the experience you've seen with your pure fiber deployment. Where are you at in your upgrade cycle? How much of your territory you're covered with fiber, and what's your objective long term?
Yep.
And just talk, maybe if you can talk about the ARPU level you're getting from fiber customers and compared to your expectations before.
Perfect, thank you. So as mentioned, we're about 61% done the optic footprint that we have now. By the end of the year, we're going to be approximately 70% build covered a substantial piece of Western Canada and Eastern Quebec. As we look forward, as 5G evolves, we'll continue to say, where is that next build and where are we going to continue to build? So our plan going forward will be leverage 5G where it's more economically viable to do so, but continuing our fiber build where it also makes sense from an investment perspective. So we'll go above 70 for sure. We'll still have to build to communities, but you may not have to build right to the home when you have 5G technology at your fingertips. And that's going to start, as we mentioned, in the end of 2020, give or take. And so as we go through that evolution, we'll be able to maximize the value of our capital spend even further than we are today with our dual build. From a perspective of how we look at our business model, it's actually better than we expected from the perspective of we went and launched a security business or home automation. And so in conjunction with the fact that when you have fiber, we're getting bigger packages from our customers, we're getting lower churn, we're getting more better economics from less chuck rolls, more quality of network, less calls to our call center. The economics are actually even better than we first anticipated. And then you throw in the multi-product of having a security offering now. Our PIC TV offering and our TV offering, churn rates continue to fall as well as you get into more of the bundle. And so we're seeing higher ARPU, lower churn, and lower cost structure, even better than we initially expected. And so that's really what's driving the best-in-class wireline returns that we've seen as compared to other markets and our competition.
Well, you certainly have the highest wireline RGU addition among your peers. Why is it so in Western Canada? Is it the competition not up to standard trying to figure out your competition against Shaw? How is it standing right now? Are they more aggressive on pricing or less? Or
the market's still very competitive, and I think it's not just Western Canada; it's parts of Northern Quebec as well. So we get the competition on both fronts. We do compete against other cable cos even in Western Canada as well. It's not all just Shaw, it's just the momentum that we have on our fiber build and getting more and more penetration through our coverage. So the 70%. Our churn coming down, because our churn is significantly higher on copper than it is on fiber, and managing through that. So it's a combination of quality service, combination of quality network, and continuing to execute on our rollout plan. And Shaw is very competitive. There is pricing skirmishes all the time, and that's typical. They have a high quality product, and they've been a very strong competitor, and they continue to be. And so it's really just us continuing with our strategy, reducing our churn rate, and getting just more and more coverage with fiber is how we're going to continue the path.
On the other side, your margins in wireline continue to be low, and you've tried to portray the potential for them to get to 35%. How far are we from attaining those objectives? What's going to drive margins in wireline to get to 35%, and maybe some timeline behind it?
Yeah, so we're looking, it's going to be, I call it, steps along the way. There's going to be no, tomorrow margins aren't going to jump to 35% by any means. It's going to be the steady as she goes. We have a couple areas. I talked about the fiber build out and the cost structure that comes with that and the margin accretion that comes with that. So you're going to see as we continue to grow our fiber base, as we continue to move from copper to fiber of our existing base, let alone our growth, you're going to see a margin improvement through our core of wireline. From the business side, we mentioned, you know, we've had a negative EBITDA growth on our business segment for a little bit as our business customers go through moving from legacy services to IP services. So as we get through that and as we have more product offerings that we continue to offer on new wave or newer wave type services for business, we see that turning around. And you know, between now and the next 18 months, I can see business getting to at least flat, if not starting to be accretive over that time frame. TELUS International would be the other one. Our margins in TELUS International are strong. Our organic growth and our organic margins in TELUS International are above what you normally see in that business model. But the acquisitions that we did were fairly material to TI's operations, but they were lower margin. So we're scaling those acquisitions to our current business model. And there'll be room for TELUS International over the foreseeable future, call it medium term, to also improve margins over that time frame. So I'd say momentum on core business and the recovery of business to positive EBITDA contribution, and then TELUS International integrating and continuing to grow its organic growth at the margins that we've seen in the past.
Is 35% a 5-year objective or a 10-year objective?
Less than 10, but yeah, I'm not going to commit to that one at the moment, but I would hope we could do it in 5, but we're still rolling that out.
Okay. You mentioned TELUS International. Data points on TELUS International remain still not very far and few between, let's say, but you seem to be more optimistic about it. Are there plans to try to get value out of that operation from a sale, from an IPO, from finding another partner? What's the plan for TELUS International?
Yeah, our plan first and foremost is continue to grow TELUS International. The two acquisitions that we did, one was an IT outsourcing, so moving up the value chain within our customer base, and we're now over $1 billion of revenue in TELUS International. Moving that mix and future-proofing TELUS International, let's say, is that as voice calls start to decline, as they will, as digitization and simplification of the customer base happens, you want to have a stickier relationship with your customers. So we've been moving up that chain. First and foremost, TELUS International brings a culture for us. We can't have customers first if our offshoring opportunities don't have the same philosophy we do. So controlling TELUS International is so key to us maintaining and delivering on our customers first initiative. So would we ever look at further monetization of TI? Maybe, if the timing was right.
Control.
But we do believe there'd have to be a control factor that would maintain our customer service initiative, as we have too much at stake. When you looked at that churn factor I talked about on wireless and the premium we get on lifetime revenue of our customers, because of that, TI is a significant portion of that. Their metrics they have, they compete with our onshore business. And so in quality, in customer satisfaction. And if we ever to lose that from that next dollar of profit and we don't control it, I think our business overall would hurt from that. So yes, there's an opportunity. Yes, we would continue to look at it, but we would definitely make sure that TELUS is well looked after in the meantime.
Any questions on wireline before I want to maybe talk a little bit about corporate, general corporate free cash flow and distribution to shareholders. Last year you had a very good free cash flow growth. In 2019, because of the double taxation, your free cash flow growth is more muted. How do you see the next cycle of dividend payment to shareholders? You're in your third year, right? Final year of your current distributions, what you said, maybe 5 to 7%, or you're running at the high end. What are we thinking? What are you guys thinking for the next cycle of dividend payment?
So our free cash flow, excluding the one-time tax payment, will be between 10 to 20% growth in 2019. So we're going to continue, obviously, looking at what is our dividend policy going forward. We fundamentally believe transparency to our investors, openness with our investors, and where we're going on returns is essential to the relationship we have with our investor base. So we are planning to update our dividend policy at our AGM in May, in which we will, highlight what that will look like, based on the fact we're still having free cash flow growth. It is a one-time tax payment that we're looking forward to making that announcement in May. But obviously, I'm not going to tip our hand on what that looks like for this quarter.
You have good growth to continue the path.
Absolutely. And when that tax payment goes away, then you'll actually see the sustainment of free cash flow after that.
Okay. Great. I think we're out of time, but if we still have time maybe for a few questions. No? Okay. So thank you, Doug.
Thank you very much. Thank you.